Hey, everybody, and welcome to a throbbing wild ride with Steve-O. Can we say, whoa, we got Joey Lawrence this week, star of hit shows like Blossom, and he's graced the cover of every teeny bopper heartthrob magazine there ever was, man. What a treat it was to talk to this guy, and I gotta say, to this day, he is very good looking. So maybe you want to consume this content with a little bit of privacy. I'm just saying. Maybe you just love privacy like I do. Maybe you care about cybersecurity like I do. That's why I use NordVPN. It's the fastest virtual private network out there, and it costs barely what a cup of coffee costs per month. And I'm telling you, it prevents people from snooping around in your bank details, your passwords, taking your online identity. I'm telling you, the safety from NordVPN is what I love, especially when I'm traveling. And boy, do I have a deal for you. If you go to NordVPN, that's NordVPN.com/Steve-O, you get a huge discount plus a free gift. And it's totally risk-free with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. Absolutely no risk, total cybersecurity, and you can treat yourself to content from all around the world that would otherwise be geo-blocked. So head over to NordVPN.com/Steve-O to jump on this deal, and let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, Joey Lawrence.
Hey.
Yeah, how you doing, man? The original J-Law.
That's right. You're right about that.
That's funny. Scott. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah, man.
Scott said that before you came in the van. I said, dude, I'm stealing that.
Do it. It's great. It's true. It really is.
You're
true.
You're the original.
This is my 40th year of doing this. Is that crazy?
Wow.
dude, it's insane. Yeah, I saw on your Wikipedia years active 1982 to
right.
present.
Right. Right, Jesus. My 40th year.
And that's commercials you started doing.
Started commercials in New York when I was a little kid and did like several of them that first year. You know, I think we did like 60 national commercials or something like that in a year, which is, you know, that's crazy, right? You don't realize. But and then it was one of those classic things back when, you know, the legends were still sort of around us. You know, Carson's guys saw that, and I was all over the TVs, you know, Tylenol commercials and Kool-Aid commercials, all these things.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's get this little kid on, you know? And I had to go audition. I had to go out to California. They flew me out from Philadelphia, which is where I'm from. And I was tapping. I had been tapping for like 2 years because I love to dance.
Tap dancing.
Yeah, from the time I was like three and a half. So when I was five, I could tap a little bit, you know, I guess. So they...
That's his way of saying he ripped.
Yeah.
Well, they brought me out to California, and I'll never forget, my mom flew out with me, and they put us up at the Sheraton, which is still there. That Sheraton
Universal?
With the orange neon, that same hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we use that for everybody around Jackass.
Yeah. It's still like the predominant hotel for this area.
Yeah, we dropped your bus off there too when we did the...
That was where we did the put this podcast with Dan Jarrett. It was parked there.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. Right.
Yeah, so I went and auditioned at the old NBC studios. Carson was in the room, and Ed DeCorda and his producer, and everyone was smoking in there. I remember that, and it was like shag carpet. And they said, what can you do? So we had an interview, and they said, what can you do? I said, well, I can tap. And they said, great. They said, so I had my boombox with me and my song prepared, you know, to tap, but there was carpet.
What were you tapping to something you're supposed to tap to, or was it like...
Well, I had prepared something. My tap teacher gave me, like, give my regards to Broadway.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so I...
Were you too young to be nervous at that point, or were
I was
you
not
like,
nervous.
Oh, shit, it's
no,
Johnny
I was
Carson.
Not. I had no idea.
What
I
mean, a cool question.
I had no idea, really. I mean, he looked like exactly like my grandfather, which he really did, and he was cool, and I knew my parents said, this is pretty cool, so go in there and do your best. So I was just doing my best. I didn't really understand the magnitude of what that was. But I told him I couldn't tap. I said, listen, I can't tap in here because there's no hard floors. And Johnny was sitting behind this massive desk, true story. And
so he said, get on the desk?
They cleared the desk off. And, he picked me up and put me on the desk. And they pressed play. And I guess I did a good job because we walked out of there. And we literally got back to the hotel. And we went home. And when we got home, there was an answering machine message from Brandon Tartikoff, who was running NBC at the time. They said, listen, Johnny, you know, loved it. We want to have him back on the show. And, you know, it was an hour and a half back then. So big Friday night show. So I flew right back. And you know,
so this tap dancing on the desk actually happened on live television?
No, it didn't. It was my audition.
Okay,
it was
good,
because unless you were like really famous,
right,
you had to go in there and sort of like, I mean, Carson, you know, that was back then when if you were on Carson the next day, like everything changed. I mean, he launched Seinfeld. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Don Rickles, you know, all that stuff was on there, and then all of a sudden, like, became household name.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, Johnny's going to have him on. He's going to come out, do a quick interview, and he'll probably let him sing and tap dance one song. I had two prepared, but he said just one. So I had to I rehearsed with Doc Severinsen in the band. I'll never forget that. The floor was this black lacquer, which was really slippery.
I'm so heartbroken that they didn't have you tap on the desk.
I know. It was so cool.
I know. I mean, dude, it's so much cooler.
I know. So I went out there and did my thing, and they said, we're going to do the song and then talk a little bit, and apparently the conversation went really well because it was on like the best of tapes. You know, I told them that I was up. The only time I'd seen the show was when I was up vomiting, which is true. And I guess, you know, Johnny with the deadpan to the audience was just brilliant. I didn't understand any of that, but looking back, I do. And then
when I'm up vomiting, why would you be up vomiting?
I was six. It was late. I was six. So the only time I was up, I could ever see the show.
I'm thinking like, were you hungover? Like
no,
a five?
I was sick of my stomach. Whatever it was, I had the flu. Right. My parents were like, I was in my parents' room. I was vomiting and Carson was on, you know, as it was in 70% of the households in the United States.
He was trying to have a career in show business. He needed to keep his figure.
Right.
That's
oh,
right.
God.
Already, yeah.
But wait, so at the time, you're introed as like, this is just some kid. He's a great talent.
He's a great talent. You've probably seen him all over the television Tylenol commercials and Coca-Cola commercials. Amazing. And da-da-da. We thought we'd have him on and have some fun. Johnny would do that from time to time.
Dude, that's great.
And I guess I kicked butt on the first number. So the interview went so well that afterwards, the producer came up and said, listen, we're going to have you talk more and go back out and do the second song. So I was on for like 18 minutes, which, as you know, is unheard of.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. So, and Joan Rivers, I guess, followed me out afterwards when I was done and they saw me off. She came out on her knees and was like, there's no way I can follow that. So the next day, NBC called and said, listen, we'd love to sign him and we have a couple of pilots. And so I did a pilot for NBC with Bob Denver called Scamps that Sherwood Schwartz created, right? Mm-hmm. Brady Bunch and all that. And then I did a pilot that was Ron Howard's first directing job called Little Shots with a bunch of young kids that went on to do great things, and finally they put me in Give Me a Break, which worked and got picked up.
Wow.
So Bob Denver, I mean, I'm just that tripped me up because Bob Denver was sort of a country musician, country road, take me home.
The actor. John Denver.
John Denver.
Bob Denver was Gilligan. You ever see Gilligan's Island?
Bob Denver was Gilligan.
Gilligan.
Yeah, Gilligan. Exactly. Yeah. Gilligan. Yeah. So
Sherwood Schwartz did Gilligan's Island too, right?
He did. He produced that too. He was one of those epic, you know, producers. You know, like Norman Lear. You know, did a bunch of great shows. Like that.
Spelling. He's like a
spelling guy. Yeah. You know, had a bunch of great shows in the golden age of TV, you know? So they put me in two pilots, didn't go, and then they had just shot a show with a Tony Award winner, Nell Carter, who was like a triple threat, multi-talented, amazing, funny lady who could sing and dance and everything. And she had her own show called Give Me a Break, you know, which was groundbreaking at the time in 1982. And they were going to add a little kid to it. And they shot the pilot and were like, we need something before we go to series. And so they put me in that, and that show became a massive hit. And that was kind of how I got my start with NBC.
And you're not shuttling back and forth between Philly and LA to do all these jobs. You kind of just made the move.
I was, believe it or not, we did not officially move. We bought a house here. We rented a house, then we bought a house. But we didn't officially move here till like 95. You know?
Wow. Yeah.
What was that law that all that they're talking about?
Yeah. We've had a bunch of people that talked about that law.
The Coogan law.
The Freddy Krueger law.
Freddy Krueger. Yep, the guy with the spikes. He told you to put your money away and you did it. He'd kill you if you didn't.
No. Your parents are only allowed to blow 85% of your money.
Well, that's what's... Right, yeah. We're gonna save 20% for you.
Yeah.
We'll have nothing else. But no. Yeah, I mean, they do that. It goes into a trust account, a blocked trust account, a certain portion of it.
Well, how were your parents though with managing their sorry, there's like a bee in here and I'm allergic to bees, so I got the shoe.
There's a bee in here?
I hate to overstate the obvious, but there's also a bee in boner. And if you want to get a serious boner, then may I suggest you try Blue Chew tablets, because they are delicious, chewable tablets with the same active ingredient as both Viagra and Cialis, except they cost only a fraction of the price. And if you ever thought it might be fun to try these boner tablets, let me assure you, it is a hoot. I have the best time with it. And you don't have to go to an awkward visit to the doctor to get your Blue Chew tablets, because all you got to do is go to bluechew.com and consult with a medical provider right there on the site. And it's quick and it's easy. And when you use the promo code Stevo, you get an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets absolutely for free. All you have to pay is $5 for shipping. Again, if you ever thought it might be fun to try some of these tablets, you were right, and you should. So go to bluechew.com, use the promo code Stevo, and get an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets for free. All you got to pay is $5 for shipping. So hop on it and have a blast. Now, let's see what happened with that bee.
There's like a big bee. There's a gnarly bee
well,
up
go
there.
Go get it. I
Come
hate
on,
bees too,
dude.
Man.
Do you
know what's funny about bees?
Yeah,
here's the deal about bees. I love bees. Vital to, you know, everything
that
you do. But here's the deal. They don't leave your ass alone. Like, you know that theory? If you don't bother it, it won't bother you.
I know.
Yeah, well, energy. You're talking to the bee expert here.
Hey, I've been stung. I haven't been doing shit. I've been sitting there in a chair.
Yeah.
Like, look at the bees. Great. Bees great. Come. That bee just stung me. I didn't do anything to that bee. Nothing. Right?
I got
that
a close eye on this
guy. Every time with bees, like if I just chilled, nothing happened. And then there's a bee scene in our new Jackass movie. The second those bees came out, they just started lighting me up.
Really? How many? You got stung a lot?
I didn't do shit. I didn't deserve it.
I heard it was a carbon dioxide thing.
Maybe bees have changed. Like, they've changed
man,
their tune.
Angry,
they
man.
Just,
if
they're
you get it, get it, bro. You
know, but I'm afraid if I swing at it, then he's...
Ah!
Did he fly out?
He flew out.
There you go.
Yeah. Holy
shit. Dude, that was pretty
awesome.
Funny.
Okay,
he
my
knew,
question
man. You
was...
You held up that shoe, you like...
I know, yeah,
out.
You felt the shoe.
Bro, you feel it, yeah.
How were your parents with managing, like, a child star and the
it
money and the fame?
My parents were fine with all that, you know? I mean, it was...
Wait, what did they do... In their own careers?
My mother was a school teacher. Has a master's degree in like early childhood development, did all that kind of stuff. She taught like third grade, amazing. And then my dad just sold like insurance. So yeah, they didn't. And you know, this was like out of the blue that it took off like this. So you know, the family, we sort of, every 3 weeks, my mom, school was very important. So I was enrolled in a little, believe it or not, private little Quaker school, because education was so good back there. It was a Friends school back on the East Coast. The Friends school system is like a really great school system. So you have Abington Friends and Georgetown Friends and all these things. Anyway, so she kept me. I was a lifer there. I graduated from there. Every 3 weeks, I'd fly back, take all my tests. All my friends were from there. It was the greatest thing ever. And then for 3 years, in between Give Me a Break and Blossom, she pulled me completely out of the business, except for commercials and a couple little movies here and there during the summer. But I had no schedule other than she wanted me enrolled in middle school, because she thought it was paramount for development, you know, and relationships. And honestly, man, it was the greatest 3 years. I'm so glad I had it, because the context, I never got caught up in any of that stuff. It was always like, this is my work, like Little League baseball. That's how we treated it. Like traveling teams, you know, I got friends, dear, they have children. They travel all over the place. My girls were both in dance leagues, and we traveled to competitions.
Sure.
My parents, and my mom was the same way. She was like, this is how we're going to treat it. So it was never became my life. It just became something I loved to do. And my friends, all my friends were my school friends. I knew everybody, but I didn't have any actor friends. You know, like I wouldn't hang out with anybody. Wow. I would hang out with my friends from back east.
And the school was a Quaker school.
Yeah, it was a Quaker school. But it was just, I mean,
that's
probably
better, because the experience that we've had talking to child stars is that there's this weird phenomenon where you're a child star, you're successful, you're, you know, talented, you're like, but you draw all of this bullying and like, you know, like it's weird. And
so, I mean, I got a little bit of that, you know. I think that we were, you know, it wasn't as highlighted as it is today. I think because of social media, it's like a platform, you know. Not only, look, there's always been bullying. I mean, always. I got, you know, I got locked in. You know, when I, it's funny, later on, when I came back and I was for like sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, the high schoolers, you know, I was pretty famous by then. So all my friends, I had known them since I was five. Most of the kids, believe it or not, like 80% of my class were lifers. So we grew up and graduated together. It was
cool.
I mean, again, these things, you don't realize how crazy wonderful that is and what a blessing that is, but it was amazing. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, some of the high schoolers, I got locked in the high school bathroom for like 3 hours, you know. Yeah, I mean, I got, you know, there was a little bit of that. I got made fun of because I'd come back with like Doc Martens, you know, and they'd be like, what an it, you know. And then sure enough, but like 2 months later, once they got to Philly, everybody was wearing them. You know, yeah, everybody was copying me. So, you know, that stuff happens. But I feel like today there's such a platform for bullies to be emboldened that there's a lot more of it. Because I think that just like anything else, you highlight somebody's bad behavior. And if they're drawn to that, it emboldens them. And now you hear about, you know, horrible things. But I got a little bit of that.
How old were you when you were doing Blossom?
I got that show when I was like 13.
So then you went to high school while you were on Blossom.
Yeah, 13 and 19.
You had the long hair.
Yeah.
Is that why you hated the long hair?
That's why, well, yes, because I didn't mind it until I couldn't change it, you know, because that became part of my character.
Yeah, you got stuck.
So, yeah, so when that was over and, you know, and we did Brotherly Love, I cut it fairly short, like the second season of that show. And then when I was done with that, right after American Dreams, I just buzzed it, you know, because that was like, I just wanted to do that.
Yeah, like Britney Spears.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. So so that was sort of my thing, and then I had shave for a while.
You know? Such a healthy, well-adjusted approach to your career is what I'm hearing. You know,
it really was, man. I mean, look, it's always been. Look, there are ups and downs to everything. I'm still 40 years in. I haven't accomplished anything, like a ton of stuff that I want that I don't want to, and you see people getting shots that you wish you got. It happens. Everybody, sure. You know, and you wonder why. And I've always had to work so hard to like reestablish things. You know, some people they get in that and then they just pop from one to one, you know, the next one, you just wow, amazing.
It's pretty rare.
It is rare.
Longevity is pretty rare.
It is. So for me, I've been around a long time, but there's been ups and downs, and I've had to really, really, really work to break down a lot of barriers along the way, because you have that kind of success as a kid. It's great, but on the other side of it is you get typecast a lot, and a lot of people think that you do your job really well. I mean, at the end of the day, Matt LeBlanc was basically playing Joey Russo, right, at 25 on Friends. I mean, as a matter of fact, they named, you know, it was Joey Tribbiani. So, like, NBC knew exactly what was going on with those two things. You know, as a matter of fact, Matt would, I think they had him come to the stage when they were in their early development of Friends to watch how I was playing that character. Because when you play a dumb character, if he's innocent and he's a womanizer, you can get away with anything because he's not like a lecherous person. So, Joey Russo got away with a lot of stuff because he was just innocent. You know, like, oh my God, I love boobs. They're amazing. That's not disrespectful because he's just being genuinely honest, you know?
Sure.
Instead of like going, yeah, baby. You know, once it gets into that, and Matt LeBlanc did that beautifully at 25. I was 15, so Matt LeBlanc was, you know, you get nominated, you get Golden Globes and things. At 15, they just think, oh, that must be what he is, you know? So coming out of that. There's a lot of transition that has to happen, and you have to break down a lot of barriers that shouldn't be there because as actors, that's what we get paid to do, is play different characters. So, like, why wouldn't you be able to do that, you know? So, anyway, but it's been great, man. I'm still here, still doing what I love to do. And
still shockingly good-looking, man.
What's the secret to the fountain of youth?
I mean, you're 45.
I'll be 46 in April, man.
I mean, Jesus, have you been with the creams and, like, the... like?
You know, I've always, my grandfather was, you know, he lived till 92, would have lived probably till 100 if he hadn't fallen. Classic case of like falling and just it going downhill quickly. But he said you get one can, what you put in it is, you know, what you get out of it. So I loved playing sports. And when I was working a lot, and especially on the Blossom years, they didn't want me to play a lot of I played football and, you know, baseball, and I broke my thumb, and then that was it. Like, they didn't want me playing any sports. So I started to put it into, like, just physical fitness. But, like, health. Not about size, not about, like, how big can I get, not about how many plates can I put on there. It was always about physical health, you know? And if you're fit as a byproduct of being healthy, then that's dope, you know? But it was not about, like, you know, and like these guys like The Rock and stuff, they're just so big. I mean, I don't want it. That's awesome. Right. But that was never what it was for me, you know? So that's part of it, is that I've always tried to eat really clean. You know, have whatever I want, just in moderation. I don't believe in diets, because I think as soon as you say no carbs, keto this, keto this, you're doomed, because you got to have whatever you want. If I want cookies, I eat them. Ice cream, pizza, I have it all. I just have it in moderation, and I eat good around it, you know?
Yeah. We're both like,
I'm so like shameful of my
no, no, but no, but that's
no,
hey,
if
man.
Scott wants cookies and ice cream, he eats it too.
Yeah.
You guys are on the same diet.
So yeah, it's partially that, it's partially genetics. Inspiring. You know, my grandfather looked awesome. I mean, he looked, you know, when he was 90, he looked like 75, you know what I mean? He just did. I mean, amazing. So my mom looks great, so I know that's part
genes.
Of it. Yeah, I think it's genes.
Because there are people who just did heroin and cocaine and and it just preserved them, you know. Yeah, like
that's true. Mm-hmm. It can go one of two ways. All that stuff can preserve you, or you fool around. Like they always said, you know, you go nuts in your teens and your 20s and your 30s. It like shows up on your face in your 40s. Right, and you're God, what happened? But the body will disintegrate at some point. And you know, I don't know. I just try to, I use creams. I like creams, man. I haven't done, you know, like the surgeries. I don't really want to do that because I think guys always look.
Well,
I don't know.
Can't stop once you start.
Well,
yeah,
that's the thing. Like, especially guys, like you start messing around with the eyes, and you start to look different. Like guys look like they get this weird, like they just witnessed a murder thing, and like it never changes. Uh-huh. It's like,
you just want to get the 11th you know, out, and all of a sudden you're like,
it's like this thing. Like, what's happened? Why is he looking like that? And it's like that's how he always looks now. You know.
Just look old. Like, dudes look good looking old. Same with ladies. They don't need all that.
I think
work
that there's something to be said about a little bit of preservation, but let it gracefully sort of happen, because what happens is you get all this plastic surgery or you get all the fillers and everything, and so many of these, even men or beautiful women, you end up thinking they're older than they actually even are. You're like, wait a minute. Why? Yeah. You must be like 60 because you're getting all this work done. Mm-hmm. They're only 50. Yeah. But they try to prevent it so much that they end up looking actually older in a weird way. Yeah. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, I go on dates with girls and their lips are so big and they're like 28.
It's
and you're
just like what?
Whoa. I think that's like once you start that.
Once you start, it's a slippery slope. The problem is once you start, it goes out. And then like people are getting all this reconstruction without like the surgery. That stuff freaks me out. They're putting all this goop in there. And then like the goop, you've seen horror stories where like, oh yeah, it makes a perfect jawline, right? And then like 6 months later, it's in here. Mm-hmm. And they got like, we'll melt that and we'll put it back in here. And then you spend the rest of your life just becoming like an experiment, you know?
So my girl had me watching that botched show.
Oh, yeah. Dude, those
really,
things.
Really, really, really gnarly stuff.
Well, he's a plastic surgeon on TV that fucks shit up.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It's pretty interesting, man. We've been doing this podcast for a while. It's introduced us to, like, so many interesting people.
Yeah.
And, like, when you have a career in show business for as many decades as you have, like, it is very rare to be so well-adjusted.
Oh.
You know, like, it seems like you've really navigated it super well. And,
Especially, like, 90s, you know, actors or...
Yeah.
I don't think I ever heard about you having, like, any sort of a...
Drug problem.
Man, I never got into the drug thing. Honest to goodness.
Jody Sweetin on.
Okay.
And then...
Corey Feldman.
Okay.
I feel like... are you guys a part of like a fraternity or sorority, you know, of like the 90s was a special time and you guys all had something to relate to?
It was, you know, it's so weird, man. It really was. And like I said, I knew all of them and I know all of them. I just never ran in those circles. Yeah. I never did it. I literally loved my family. I love my brothers so much. I swear to God, I spent most of my time with them. And I really did spend the other free time that I had with my best friends from Philadelphia, like Chris and Ryan, and just my guys that I grew up with. And they would fly out. My cousin Neil, I would rather them fly out for the summer. And it was true. Chris would come out for 2 weeks. You know, Neil would come out for 2-3 weeks. And then I would work a little bit in the summer. And then we'd go on a family vacation with my brother for 2-3 weeks. And that was my summer. Mm-hmm. Like, and then other than that, work was my drug. Like, I love to work. Still to this day, I love working. I love, you know, the opportunity to be successful, take care of everybody. When I was 21 and stuff, I mean, sure, I drank, but I never got to that place where I needed to drink. Still to this day, I don't need an alcoholic beverage at all. I do need to do is work out. I do feel that. And I use a lot of my own body weight, so I can do it at home now, which is great, especially since the last 2.5 years of nightmare. But push-ups and pull-ups, little lightweight on my arms, that's it. And some light cardio. But honestly, like a nice hike or jumping jacks is all guys need. All this treadmill stuff is useless.
Dude. Wow. Yeah. I really, really think that that's impressive. The whole, we're going to treat this career like Little League.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what it was.
I've never heard that, and I think that just makes so much sense, and it's probably got a lot to do with why you stayed on the right track.
100%. 100%.
But at the same time, though, when you're in high school, even middle school, aren't you on the cover of like Tiger Beat?
Everything.
Like you're like a teen. Yep. Teen magazine. Talk about an understatement. I mean, this guy is still the most throbbing heartthrob ever. I don't think any of us can expect to look as good as Joey Lawrence. But what we can expect is to keep looking as good as we do right now for much longer if we just take care of ourselves and what we put in our bodies. Now, admittedly, I don't eat that great of a diet lately, but I don't have to worry too much because I'm filling in the gaps in my diet with Athletic Greens. This stuff is magic. It's absolutely delicious. And one serving is loaded with 75 different vitamins and minerals and probiotics, all kinds of healthy, whole food sourced nutrition, and it's absolutely delicious. I religiously start every day with it by dumping one of these packets into 16 ounces of water, swirling it up, and I can do that on a totally empty stomach, unlike all kinds of other supplements which aren't even delicious. This fills in the gaps in my diet, takes care of my nutrition, and it is delicious. Plus, if you go to athleticgreens.com/Stevo, then with your first purchase, you get 5 free travel packs of AG1, which again is what I use every morning, plus an entire year's supply of immune-boosting vitamin D. Again, that's the deal that you get if you go to athleticgreens.com/Stevo. So, dude, jump on that deal and let's get back to throbbing.
Yeah,
like you're like a teenage sex symbol, like heartthrob.
Yeah, you had the flannel wrapped around your waist.
Cover like, the magazines.
Yeah. You know, you look back. There was a decade there where, you know, whenever I would travel, we'd have to travel with security. I really couldn't drive anywhere. You know, I was driven, which is, by the way, so weird because I love cars. I love to drive. I always loved cars. Ever since I was like 2 years old, I could literally name a car off like a door handle. I don't know why, but wow. I've been obsessed. I collected Matchbox cars, went to the Borrego models, and then, you know, big cars when I could do that. But, it was a wild 10 years. I mean, it was amazing. You know, we do autograph signings. We'd go to like Paramus, New Jersey at a Sam Goody's there, especially when my first record came out and stuff. And, you know, like 30,000 people would show up. Now,
Jesus.
Today, you would hear about that in 2 seconds. But back then, you know, it took a little while. But
right.
That's the kind of crowds. I mean, we went to, and it was all over the world. I mean, it was not just here. So
it was
really a tremendous time. And yeah, but I never thought about it. Like, it was just weird. I never got caught up in it. I was appreciative of it. Sometimes I didn't appreciate it enough, actually, like exactly kind of what was happening, you know?
Right.
And, but I never, it never was my life. I was always excited to do the work and then get done, like not deal with it.
Did you have like girlfriends when you were in that phase? Like—
I did. I had a girlfriend, you know, for a long time that I met, and then we were kind of together for like 5 years during that, four and a half, 5 years during that, which was rare. And then dated a little bit, and then, you know, like, look, I'm a hopeless romantic, so, you know, married the wrong person when I was young, you know, like 22, it lasted like 6 months, 23, it lasted 6 months, and then I got back together with my high school sweetheart, believe it or not, and we got married, and then 15 years went by, it was when we just grew apart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
It makes me sad, but just the way it works, and just realize that's not the right person. I have 2 beautiful daughters from that, and I love my daughters, and, you know, we share custody, and I see them literally all the time and every day, you know, but they are my life, and I love them, and I pride myself on being the best dad that I can be, but, you know, that bums me out because I wish that would have been right. It just isn't. You know, my parents were married 30 years before they got divorced. I don't know why, but it just happens that way sometimes, you know, man? It just happens.
Yeah.
It's a bummer, but that's just the way it works. So, you know, definitely not perfect, dude. I mean, you know, you make your mistakes and stuff, but, you know, I tried to mitigate those as much as possible. I think accountability, which was ingrained in me at a very young age, just taking responsibility for the things you do incorrectly, you know,
sure.
that's a big testament to sort of like realizing like, hey man, you're not perfect and I'm far from that. So
yeah.
I think there's accountability and then there's just plain beating yourself up. And I think you're giving yourself a hard time like, hey dude, like relationships don't
they just don't.
Yeah.
I
wish they did. Amicable divorce, if that's your worst thing, yeah. that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
For especially someone in your...
Go easy on yourself, J-Law.
Yeah. Come on, J-Law.
No, it's good.
You're still the number one J-Law.
I know, I know. Yeah. You know what's crazy, though, is that it really, you... It's this desire to get married young and have your kids young. It really is weird because you really have a much better chance of meeting the right person when you're older, because the pretense is gone, and you know, right. you know who you are, and
yeah.
you know, you've grown into who you are, and they've grown into who they are. You know, yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough to meet finally, I think, the right person for me. You know, about almost 2 years ago. You know, year and a half ago, pretty much. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. You know, and you just never you realize nothing is perfect, but you realize like, wow, when it's right. That's what it is. It's like a best friend. You always grow up thinking like opposites attract. It's great that I have my thing and she doesn't really know about my thing and she has her thing. Mm-mm, man. You actually want somebody that speaks the same language, has the same sense of humor, you can like be yourself around, that when something's going down, like you actually want to talk to them, not like the specified friends that know who right. you are, mm-hmm. you know? Because yeah. that just divides like fissures in a relationship. She doesn't get it, so I'll talk to him, and then I'll talk to her because they get it, you know? And then you're not really right. bonding with the very person that you're supposed to grow old with, you mm-hmm. know? So definitely. It's really a misnomer that I think a lot of times we get caught up in, but I've realized that late, you know?
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Good to notice.
So when did the music kick in?
Music was, believe it or not, first. That's what I love, which is why I was able to sing and dance on
Carson.
Oh, Carson.
That's why you were tap dancing on Johnny right, Carson's right. desk.
And then you had a top 100 Billboard. It was like top 19 album.
It was a top 19 album. It was number one on the single. Nothing But Love Can't Fix was number. It was number yeah. one song and top five on Billboard. R&R was radio plays, right? And Billboard was sales. So it was top five on Billboard, number one on R&R. It did really well, that first record. Classic story happened with that where just I'll just leave it at horrible mismanagement by the team and a lot of stealing and all that stuff and left a terrible taste in your mouth. And then just kind of got shepherded into
it. When you say the team, is that the label?
Or? Yeah, it was just a bunch of... The label and my personal music management and just... It was a big mess.
Music management in the 90s sounds awful.
It was...
Especially just, for like a pop star. Yeah, it's like...
An embezzlement scheme waiting to happen, you know, if you didn't have the Hawks out. And my parents... You know, they learned on the fly. My mom was not savvy about any of that stuff. So, and you know, I learned the hard way by basically having every mistake made, you know? So, anyway, left a bad taste in my mouth. We did a second record, but I didn't want to, and it didn't do well. And then I just took a break because I just didn't want to do it. But the first record did super good. So we started releasing music again about three, four. I've always released every now and then a little song here and there, but about 3 years ago, seriously started to release some music again. And it's done really, really, really well. And this latest collab I did with Matthew Gerard, who's a great pop writer, he's written smash hits for everyone from Smash Mouth to Miley Cyrus to Kelly Clarkson to everybody. He really believed, and we started co-writing some stuff. And this newest stuff that I've been releasing has been crushing on Spotify and stuff, which is weird. So all of a sudden,
wow, that's interesting. So you had success with music in the 90s,
out of the gate,
when there
very
was
much.
No, but before Napster, before
any
like,
of that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So there was just pure money.
Yeah.
And then now, like, you come back and it's a completely different
totally
landscape.
Different, man. Yeah, man.
And
it's so weird.
And you say it's doing very well now, but...
It is. You do it on streams. You know, it's just the barometer of doing well, too, is like,
right.
I mean, you know, back then it's like,
right.
I mean, you know, a million records was like, good. That's pretty good. Million, man. Way to go. Platinum. Good job. You know, let's get to 2 million. Let's get to 3 million.
Right.
You sell a million records. I mean, you're Adele. You know, like, there's very few people
right.
that even
right.
go half a million now. I mean, it's
right,
crazy.
Right, right.
There's very few people. And it's only because people covet the actual, you know, physical item. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it either, you know? So
right.
once we started giving away music, it's... Changes everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you're counting for Adele to hit a million, like an iTunes purchase. Like that's
right.
it's not just
right.
the
right.
If you only counted the physical CDs,
oh,
then
be
these,
nothing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. it'd be mere fraction. Yeah,
but without people actually purchasing music, you're still getting meaningful revenue from the Spotify.
You get it, but the volume has to be great. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it has to be millions and millions of streams.
How
you know,
are you promoting your music to reach people? Are there
you know, it's such, and that's another crazy thing. I mean, you do it on your socials, you know. It goes viral. Those things, they take on a life of their own. They're still trying to, I mean, look, the whole world has been changing, right? The last 3 to 5 years has been a complete upheaval of pretty much everything. And it's going to continue. I mean, it's now, look at what's happening with, you know, digital currency and NFTs.
Are you into that?
My brother is obsessed with it. My middle brother, Matt, he's been diving in deep to all that stuff. I am just like, man, I don't know. I mean,
How many brothers do you have? You have two?
I have two younger brothers, yeah.
Two younger brothers.
Matt, you know, who just turned 42 yesterday, and my brother Andrew, who's 34, so.
Andrew, 34, is the director?
He's a director. He's the one that directed...
The Lifetime movie?
The Lifetime movie that I met my fiancé on, by the way, which is crazy because I've never, ever, like, worked with someone and, like, dated them. Like, never. I never did that, and this was crazy because my brother put together this movie. He wrote it, and I was like, okay. He asked me to do it, and I said, all right. And at the last minute, the actress they had set, it was in the middle of COVID, you know, the actress they had set, so we were all, nobody knew anything, you know, so I was like, all right, let's just be chill, let's just be careful. At the last minute, she traveled or something, and then, you know, obviously that was like, no, we can't do it, so they had to recast. I didn't even have time, I didn't know who it was. I was like, what? I was going on the set, hadn't seen a picture, nothing. I was like, Andy, you're killing me, dude. If this is anybody but you, like, there's no way I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. No way. So I was a little bit of a brat going in there because he's my baby brother, and I was like, I'm doing you a solid, man. I don't even know who I'm working with.
And so, she was your on-screen romance?
Yes. So yes, I was the bad guy, but yes, she was. I was the one that was trying to swindle her money, and then she ends up with the right guy. But yes, but it was our movie, yeah. So, day one, I come in there, you know, with, I'm always a pro, but I came in there with, like, brotherly attitude, you know, like, let's do it, you know? So, you know, and the first scene, of course, which I was so pissed off, was a scene where we were in bed, and, you know, and I had to, like, share a bed. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, bro. I am so pissed at this schedule. You know, he's like, just do it, please. And, you know, I swear to God, please. So I get in there, and she cracks a joke because she's one of the funniest people that I've ever met, and she's like, that what's up attitude, you know? And I was like, what? Who is this? You know? And lo and behold, man, like 3 weeks goes by, and she's literally the coolest person I ever met, you know? And then, like, you know, 18, 19, 20 months later, it's like, it's been the greatest 19 months of my life, especially coming out of, you know, a tough time, you know, divorce. Yeah. And, you know, divorce is funny. People hear divorce and they see a filing date and, you know, that's the end of it. You know, they don't realize that
two, three,
4 years before then. So it's so funny because so many times they hear like, oh, well, he got divorced and, you know, or filed for divorce in June. And by, you know, November, yeah, he's dating someone else. And you're like,
the ink wasn't even dry.
Right. Don't you love that? It's like, you know, so I'm like, well, wait a minute. First of all, November, that's like 5.5 months. But more than that, it's 5 years.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, they don't see the deterioration and how and the pain and the ups and downs from everybody involved in that relationship, both sides, you know. So that's what kills me. But at any rate, it's been the greatest 19 months. And
amazing.
I'm very blessed and thankful for that. So.
And the Lifetime
movie. But Andy directed that Deadly Deed. He directed that and wrote that. So
that was, so there's a Lifetime movie and that's different from the Amazon movie?
Yes. Then we put together a little Christmas film that we sold to Amazon called Mistletoe Mix-Up, which was my brother Matt had the lead in that. I was a supporting character in that because we try to do things together when we can.
Yeah.
We actually haven't worked together. We had a big show together called Brotherly Love and did a bunch of TV movies together. And then for like literally 15, 17 years, you know, it's the classic thing. Like we couldn't get on the same page to work together. So we always hung out, but you know, like we were doing our own thing. So, and then you kind of get to a point where you're like, I guess like the Jonas Brothers, like, you know, they broke apart, right? Didn't want to record. And then all of a sudden, even after Nick had all that success, he's like, I kind of would rather just do it with my brothers, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what we do is like when it makes sense, we kind of like working together. So we just do it.
So there was one Jonas brother that was like
Nick broke out.
Oh, Nick for sure is the
Nick
most successful.
For sure. Yeah.
He's been like a judge on The Voice. Like he's
I mean, Nick had massive hits by himself.
Yeah.
Now, Joe Jonas did as well with DNCE. He had a couple of hits.
Yeah.
Remember Cake by the Ocean and stuff like that. But Nick, I mean, had like two, in my opinion, I love pop music. He had two great solo records. And
so
did
Nick's
not
like
need.
Alec Baldwin.
He's
Nick's like Alec. Yeah.
So he certainly didn't, in a business sense, need to go back and record with his brothers.
Right.
It's like Justin, I don't know if he'll ever go back with NSYNC, but he certainly doesn't need to, you know?
Right.
And Nick did, because I love that. I always root for those guys because I love the fact they truly do love each other. You know what I mean? And so do my bros and I, we love each other. And so that's why we started working together again. And we said, let's just have some fun, man. This world's crazy. I don't know what's going on. So during COVID, we're like, let's just work together, you know? And we did it. And it was like the number one holiday movie on Amazon. So we're going to do a sequel to that, which is fun.
Sweet.
And then my fiance and I, which is the first time I've ever done this, we wrote a script together, a romantic comedy in the vein of like, you know, When Harry Met Sally, like a throwback sort of dialogue-driven rom-com with Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold it to Tubi, which Fox and their streamer Tubi, and we're going to shoot it over the summer. And I had them hire Andy to direct it. So
nice.
Yeah,
super cool.
That's really cool.
What was the dynamic like originally when you like? Because you're already kind of famous,
right?
And your younger brothers are like, we want to act too,
right?
Or
yep.
They were just like, we want to be like Joey,
yep,
of course,
pretty
right?
Much.
And you were like, don't do it.
I was like, don't do it. You'll never live up to it, guys. Ever.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll never be in my massive 5'9" shadow.
Right. So was it like really competitive? Were you like,
it was
let
not
me
competitive.
Help you guys out?
Was,
how was that?
I was basically doing anything I could, you know? I never thought about it as competition, you know? So I just didn't. I mean, I put them on the shows that I was on, and you know, and then they got their own shows because they, you know, they were on their own vehicles because they're really good.
Yeah.
And we always did that. Always.
Was there any like advice you had for them? I mean, you had avoided a lot of trappings
just
anyway.
Just by example.
So,
I just led by example, you know. And my brothers are a little rowdier than I am, you know. But I always lead by example.
A little rowdier.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Andy's like the rock and roll guy, you know, and you know, yeah. So. They always, you know, they were just a little more rambunctious than me, you know, but I was like Grandpa Joe. I don't know why, you know,
uh-huh.
But I just never, I was always into sports and just, I don't know, man, school and working. I love to work. I love to be clear headed. I never liked rolling onto a set like out of my mind. I would see it so many times from my peers just going like, how are you going to function today, bro? What?
Mm-hmm.
How late were you up? What were you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
So for me, mm-hmm. even to this day, like when I have, if I have a 7 a.m. call, I'm up at 4. I take a shower, workout, eat breakfast, and then I come to set. I'm ready. I don't need to like make me somebody before I can roll the set. I just never approached it that way, you know? So it's like a sports thing. You got to be prepared,
right.
You know? So
good for
that's
you.
Where I come from.
We've had a ton of Dancing with the Stars alumni.
Okay. Yeah.
And you guys are both Dancing with the Stars alumni.
It's great.
Yep.
That's right, dude.
I was on there.
That's right, dude.
What year did you do that?
I did it. It was season 3.
Holy
it was
shit.
A massive season because it was just, you know, that was, I mean, the ratings were insane that year.
Right.
I think they were getting like 20, they were averaging 20 million or something like that
you
an episode.
Emmett Smith.
It was Emmett and Mario and I turned in, Mario Lopez and Emmett Smith and I turned into this like
dance off.
It was like a trio and we were all really competitive. I think the first week, like we got triple tens like consecutively week after week after week after each other. So it was like, I think Mario did it first and then I did it and then Emmett did it and then it was on. So we all got to the finals and then Emmett won, you know, but it turned into this massive thing. So you know, they still do the Dancing with the Stars tours, but they're much diminished from, I mean, we went on a stadium tour. So when I toured, it was myself and Joey Fatone and Drew Lachey and Joey McIntyre and Emmett. And we literally, I mean, we sold out Staples Center for 3 nights.
Wow.
So that's how big the tour was.
Holy
it was,
shit.
I had a bus that was, believe it or not, the bus that I got to travel around in. We each had our own buses. I mean, I had never done anything like this because even when I toured for my music, I had to do it by plane because I was doing my show, so I could never go on like a tour. So mm-hmm. I flew over to London and I tour and I flew, but I never did like the bus tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh man. They built a bus, I guess, for Jennifer Lopez, right? This crazy cool bus. She, I guess, then got pregnant, like postponed her tour for a minute. So I got this brand new, like, multi-million dollar bus.
Pre-post?
It was crazy, dude. Like, I mean, flat screens. They treated us so good, but we always stayed at, like, whatever the best hotel was. There were so many nights where even if there was, like, a Four Seasons there, I was like, I'm just going to stay on my bus, dude.
That's what I do.
I love this
Steve.
Bus. I don't want to. Yeah, why would I get out of my bus? Like,
yeah.
I love it. I showered. I got my TV on. I'm, you know, I don't need it. So
right.
18 months on and off, we toured. And it was the coolest 18 months. It was so much fun, dude.
And the show is, like, you would come out and do a dance or something,
yeah,
right?
So basically what we do is, we'd each have our solo dances that were like fan favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd have group
when
numbers.
When you say solo dances, but with your partner.
With our partners,
right.
So mine was Edita Slawinska, who's not on the show anymore, but she was fantastic. And intermittently they would like stagger our things, you know, and we would come out and we would scam likely. Don't you know these new things? Scam likely. Mm-hmm. It should be scam definitely. It's not likely.
Yeah. Likely a scam.
Yeah. You know, so we would come out and they'd like stagger us. So I'd do my solo number and then Emmett and then Mary, and then we'd have like a group number with the three of us, which no one had ever seen before. Mm. And then they'd have company numbers. We had Ray Chu and a crew that was our band. We had like a massive, it was like a pop tour. It was we had rigs. We had 18 trucks. They loaded us in. Whoa. I mean, it literally was like a Bieber tour. It was that big.
And I got to believe that the tour was for you far more lucrative than being on the show.
Way more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back then, it was okay, but they exponentially, they've realized to get talent, they have to pay a lot more. You know, the tour, we knew what had happened, so
the more they're paying, the numbers are going to go down. I think
that's what happens.
I got in pretty early. I was on Dancing on the Stars with.
What season were you on?
I was on Dancing with the Stars in 2009.
Okay, you got in early because I was in six.
Yeah,
so you were like season six.
Yeah,
seven. Right.
So we got new music coming out. We're gonna let everybody know about this.
Cool.
Where can they get it?
Well, they can get it everywhere. They can get it on Spotify. They can get it on iTunes. They can get it on Amazon Music. They type in Joey Lawrence. J-Law. Yeah.
Let's get your J-Law. Yeah. SEO number one.
I swear, I said one day I've been asked this question, you ever going to do a movie with Jennifer Lawrence? I said, I'd love to do a movie with Jennifer Lawrence because literally they said the poster's got to be J-Law.
Just one.
J-Law. Or just one. Just J-Law one. And then just arrows. Yeah. So you can get it everywhere. We've released a lot of singles, and Guilty, which is this little 5-song LP that I did with Matthew Gerard, is going to be coming out in its entirety at the end of February. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Do you, are you the one putting, presumably you have music videos?
We actually, you know, it's a weird thing because you don't really need music videos. We had to see how it was going to do. So I think we're going to record. I'm going in actually next week to record a brand new song with Matthew that I wrote with him called Bullshit, which is going to be, I know it's BS, but Bullshit is the name. And it's I've never done anything like that, but it's a cool little vibe.
That's the edgiest thing you've ever done in your career.
Pretty much.
And he said BS.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's called BS.
Yeah. Well, you know, man, it's just so weird racy, for me. I mean, like, you know, it's just such a crazy thing. The amount of expletives in music today is I know I sound 100, but it's mind blowing. I have two daughters, you know. I have I have an almost 16-year-old daughter and a almost 12-year-old daughter. I mean, dude, I grew up, you know. I mean, it is nothing like Ludacris and Snoop, and I mean, it is nothing compared to those guys that I grew up with. I mean, it is astounding.
Well, I mean, like the Ghetto Boys were pretty.
Yeah, they were, but I mean, this was. But I think it's the actual. I think it's filthiness. The sentiment. It's not necessarily the words, because I'm not. Look, I'm from East Coast. I mean, I grew up on sets. I got a mouth like a trucker, but it's the actual sentiment. It's not really the words. Edge is great, you know, like go fuck yourself. Whatever. I'm cool with that, but it's. The way they speak it, especially since I have daughters, like I'm just like, oh my God. I mean, some of these lyrics are astoundingly wild that would be. And then these little girls are singing them.
Yeah.
And you're going, like, tell my daughters, like, do you hear what you're singing?
Yeah, they panned when whoever did the wet ass pussy song. And then you pan to the audience, and it's like 9-year-old girls in there singing it with their mom.
Like, I'm cool, but like at some point you're going, like, wow,
it's
like
how the fuck?
Right? How did the fuck? I mean, wow, that's crazy because, like, I'm all for, you know, like I mean, I grew up in a house full of women, so I raised a house full of women, so my mother was like the dominant figure in my house, so strong women is amazing, but I'm like, how does this sort of lend itself to that whole narrative?
I remember
like,
when
strong
I was,
women, we got to support, respect, and then like, wow, it's crazy,
right.
But you know, look, it's not for me to say if they can do what they want, obviously, and they haven't done a success with it, and they're really catchy, so I get it, but. Boy, do I fall into that old dad fart vibe where I'm like, hey, what the hell is it? No. Mm-mm. Nope. So they have like dad's playlist now where they go, I got to skip this one because you're not going to let me play it. I'm like, you're so right. Funny. I'm not going to let you play that in my car. But hopefully they'll like me for it when they're older. They hate me. You know, they don't think it's cool now. But so many times my parents or my grandparents, especially my grandfather, did things. And I was like, man, what? And, but when I grew up, I was like, wow, dude, you were so right.
Well, I remember we bought the Chronic. A 92 album, and like my dad saw it, and he's like, the marijuana leaf, and then he's like, and it's parental advisory, and he threw it in the trash. You know, it's
crazy?
Like,
I know.
I grew up when the parental advisory meant something.
Right, of course. Do you know that I had a very similar experience like that because a buddy of mine turned me on to Andrew Dice Clay. okay, in seventh grade when he, nice. When he had
the
that
sentiment there.
Dice don't hurt him, right? And
Little Boy Blue. He needed the money.
That's right. I still know them all. I literally could do them all for you right now. Anyway, so in seventh grade, I'm back in school, right? Fully submerged, right, in school. And we're going on a coal country trip because Philadelphia, so we're going to go to coal country. Overnight trip. And my buddy Ross, no joke, I don't even know where Ross is. I lost touch with that. I don't know where Ross is. But he was a good friend of mine in seventh grade. And he's on the bus ride. We got like a three-hour bus ride. He goes, "Hey, Joey." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Have you heard this new comedian?" I'm like, "No, but I love comedy, you know?" He's like, "Great." He's like, "Listen to this." And for 3 hours, dude, I memorized that entire, both sides of that mm-hmm. tape, okay? When he was like, "What the fuck? So some chick was sucking my," you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, yeah. "Fuck you, fuck ball," you know, this whole thing. Little Bo Peep fucked a sheep, blew a horse, licked its feet, shaved his ass so very nice, tongued his balls not once, but twice. anyway, I'm going to embarrass everybody that's listening, especially my family. My family, oh God, Joe. No, they still do it for my brothers, and they're like, "Joe, really, shut the fuck up." You know, yeah. Anyway, so I get home, and my dad picks me up from the bus stop, I swear to God. And he's like, my dad loved comedy. So I was like, "Dad." He's like, "How'd the trip go?" "It was great, but guess what? I found this new comedian." He's like, "No way." I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Can we go to Sam Goody?" He's like, "I'm taking my son to get a comedy tape." Absolutely. Because he always tried to get me to listen to like George Carlin and stuff, but I didn't uh-huh. get it. So George Carlin's amazing, but at 12, I was like, "I don't, sure. It's okay." You know, I like Eddie Murphy and stuff, you know? So he was like, "Great, let's do it. Comedy, fantastic." So we go in there, "Andrew Dice Clay, this sounds great." So he puts it in, I swear to God, in the first line, it's like, "Dice, Dice." He's like, "Da, da, 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 da." "So I was fucking some chick." My dad goes, "Okay, what the fuck? What is this?" Yeah. I swear to God. "Nope, nope, nope." He popped the thing out, just what your dad did. He's like, "Absolutely not."
That's so funny.
Yeah, but still to this day, I know it all. Yeah.
But he's like sitting there like, "Can't we just listen to Carlin?" Which is also like,
it is
dirty,
but,
and you know.
But again, yeah. It was like a whole new Dice was a I whole know. New. He was a whole new level
exactly.
of like.
Exactly, which is kind of like what the songs are now.
Right. Yes, right.
It's like the wet ass pussy of his day.
He was
yeah. right.
He was,
and you're like, "Girls, can't we just put on a thong song or something?"
It is literally, you know, like, you become your parents.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
really. When you have children, I think you do. It's yeah. not that I'm like my parents. I mean, I am in certain regards, but my kid, like, I just go, and you know, you become like a fart, man, like a fart. And I try not to be. I think I'm pretty cool in a lot of ways, but that stuff, I just feel like it's my duty to just at least say this is inappropriate, you know?
Right.
You
at least give them that. Yeah.
Yep. And I do. I mean, they listen to it. I don't like ban it, but I just sure. go, "This is just listen." All I'm asking is just really take in what they're saying.
Right.
Here. And like, yeah, great beat. I don't care. You know.
I think there are a lot of like child stars and kind of stars in general whose work is like very clean and family friendly, but the stars themselves are not,
you know, Bob Saget
yeah, yeah, I was gonna say yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and it seems like I really get the sense that you're the work you did in your career was all very family friendly, and that's genuinely who you were
yeah.
in your life.
Yeah, I am. Look, man, I mean, yes, really.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have that underbelly side. You know, kind of what you right. see is what you get. Like I said, I'm not a perfect guy. You know, I got drunk off my ass a lot in my 20s, but I never got involved in those situations where it went too far. You know,
right.
I always had an awareness. My mom told me what you put into your body. Think about it. It has nothing to do with me. If you're at these parties and there's drugs flowing around, and there's a lot of, if you do that to you, there's a chance that you can die. I love you. I don't want it to happen, but you're not doing it for me. You're doing it for you. And that struck such a chord to me, and I don't know what it was, but when it was presented to me, and there were several opportunities where it was, you know, and rampantly, obviously, you know, being famous and as famous as I was, and you know, I mean, it was everywhere, you know, mm-hmm. and I just was like, I got actually off on saying no. I really did. I was like, "I don't need it. Bro, get out of my face. Dude, have fun. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it." And I just, because I wanted to go to the gym in the morning, I didn't want to screw up my gym schedule. I didn't want to mess up my work schedule. I was, you know, getting up and driving my brother to school and then driving to the set and, you know, doing my work. And then, you know, I would get a workout in on the lunch break, you know. So, like, I don't know.
Jesus.
I just did that.
Being a heart on the cover of Heartthrob magazines,
yeah.
just the opportunity to act out sexually that you had,
yeah.
and you didn't take advantage of that.
Like, I mean,
that's where I kind of feel mad at you.
Well, and you know what? My best buddy does too. Dave, if you're listening, he's like, "Man, we became best friends at about, I was like about 17 or 18, I was about 18, right? And he was like, "My God, if I just met you 5 years ago, you know? And yeah. What, yeah. But, you know, he
comes over, he's like, let's get fucked up and get some pussy. And you're like, nah, I didn't go to the gym right now.
Yeah, dude, we got to focus. Like, yeah. We got goals, what? Man. We got goals. No, look, I mean, look, there was opportunity, you know, there was some fun that I had for sure, but I never, I mean, there was amazing experiences that I was able to have where I'm like, I cannot believe this person likes me. You know, I can't believe I'm kissing this person. But, you know, it's just, I mean, it never got out of control. Let me just put it that way. It was never in a situation where I allowed myself to just be out of control. I didn't know what I was doing. I always wanted to be aware of what I was doing.
Yeah. Like Scott and I, for sure, probably not Paul, but Scott and I, we're both sober alcoholics. We're both crazy histories of acting out sexually. And I think that the dynamic for us and for, you know, a lot of guys, if not most guys, is that, you know, there's something about the conquest of, you know, a sexual conquest that validates you.
I know.
You know, that
like
validates
finding
you.
Your identity and, you know, like yeah. that. It's all wrong. It's if you can, so
if,
wrong.
If you can hook up with a chick, then that somehow boosts your self-worth. When in reality, like, having, like, promiscuous sexual encounters does not increase one's self-worth. It depletes it, mm-hmm. you know? And right. and it seems that, like, right. the more you act out trying to validate yourself, you're actually just driving, you know, you're
digging making, deeper and like, deeper into a hole.
Yeah. Like well, what girl wants to, you know, live happily ever after with the guy who humped 500 chicks, you know? Like, and that's where guys are considering that validation.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you just, Scott and I were not secure in who we were, right. you know, like right. we were very insecure, and that's why we wanted to act out.
Right.
And I just get the sense again that you were very secure in who you were, and you didn't need to do that.
I think so. I was very secure in that area for sure. You know, when it came to being, unfortunately, being on TV and doing everything, I overanalyze myself a lot. You know, like I get insecure about my actual self. Mm. You know, like, you know, is my hair okay, or are the eyebrows too much? Is the beard too much?
Your hair is just fine.
No, but I mean,
you're you perfect.
Know, but no. I would always get really insecure about that, you know. So I think I took it on myself, like about how I looked, my personal being was, were the clothes okay, everything like that. That I obsessed over, you know. I was worried about more than about being, you know, like, you know, perfect or trying to be okay or close to perfect, you know, mm-hmm. which is impossible and nobody should be. And actually, it's much more attractive to not be perfect, you know. So, but I think that because I started so young and I was in a system where you were in a grind, man. I mean, but coming out of the 80s, 90s, it was like there was no get out of jail free card, and nobody, you know, gave you like puppies when you were upset. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't do your job, you were fired, you mm-hmm. know, like, and there's a brutality to that, but I don't think going as far as we've gone on the other side, which is being too soft, is good either. There's a middle ground, which is great. Mm-hmm. You got to be accountable. You got to take responsibility for your actions. Everything is not somebody else's fault. You know, if you don't step up, the world is, if you don't do your job and you work for a boss and he thinks or she thinks some way, you have to step in line with that. You work for them. Now, maybe one day you'll be the boss.
Right.
But this thing, like, I can do what I want even though I work for you, that didn't fly when I was growing up. I mean, you got fired, you know? So that, to me, I think I then took it personally and was like, I got to be perfect all the time. And that's where I became insecure. But not with you know, yeah, not with, like, notches on your belt or whatever that old horrible saying is, you know, to make myself feel better about myself. You know, my self-worth came from just the kind of work I did, if I felt good about it, and the way I treated my family and the way I treated my friends. You know, that's where my
self-worth. It's cool, the ownership. You talk a lot about, like, ownership and the way your mom put, like, drug use. She was like, don't do it for me. It's like, it's you.
It's you.
Your decision, you're only hurting yourself.
And she told me so many things about that stuff, even like sharing food and stuff. She's like, you know, you want to get cold sores, go ahead, man. You know, suck down all the, you know, you want to swap spit, God knows what you're going to get. Mouth's one of the dirtiest things on the planet, you know? So I was like, but, you know, and for me, it was like, yeah, like, you really want to know somebody so that you can ask questions, you know? Like, hey, you know, you have any weird, like, mouth shit going on, you know? Because I really like you, you know? Instead of just diving in and going, like, 2 weeks later, like, what the fuck is it? Oh, my, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was so worried about that shit, you know? So
yeah.
Scott and I were like, ask no questions, act out as much as possible, and then be like in the grips of terror over what have I done.
Yeah.
And
you know
what?
And I'm a germaphobe.
You know what? I had friends like that. Yes. But I had friends like that that would call me crying, going like, I don't know what the fuck, dude. I know I'm getting something. And you know, more times than not, they didn't. But like, there were a few times my friends were like, oh shit, you know? And it, unfortunately, look, everybody goes through their own things, but that's the journey of life, and that's what it is. But man, if you can prevent some of it, like, prevent it. Yeah. Try. You know, do your best.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, I know we got to let you go, dude. Let's promote some stuff for you. We got we got the socials. Let's let them know what that is.
Yeah, I am. Well, it's at Joey Lawrence on Instagram and Twitter, and I actually Joey Lawrence on TikTok, which I just started.
Wow, nice.
I just branded. My daughter's like, Dad, what do you got to do it? And so I was like, all right, I'll try. So we put up a couple brand new things on TikTok. You know, look, the socials are doing all right. I have a very loyal fan base. As you know, it's like these numbers, they're so bloviated so many times. You hear these numbers like, oh, 50 million, you know, 80 million. But you look at engagements, they'll like put something out.
Right.
Like nobody cares. So, you know, I got 400,000 on Facebook. I have like, you know, 250,000 on IG. I got, you know, that's what it is. Twitter's another like 350,000. But like when we put out a single, like, you know, 85,000 downloads. So like my fans are really, really, really engaged because I never hired a company to do it. It was all myself. I haven't been doing it that long, and it's growing now exponentially, I think, because I'm talking about it and like putting up videos. My lady is great with that. She's helping me do that because I never showed any other, like, I was always afraid to like be myself on that thing, be stupid and just be goofy. And I love to mess around and just do dancing, and you know, so
do break out the tap shoes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna do that.
Desk.
I'm gonna do that. That's actually a good idea.
It's got to be on.
Reenact it. Do you have like do you have an old clip of it? And then on TikTok,
nobody filmed the audition.
Nobody filmed the audition, man. I wish I did, but nobody did. You know, it was actually the 29th anniversary of my first number one hit coming out. It was it was on the 9th. So just for the hell of it, like, we intercut, I put it on TikTok, we intercut a little my actual music video that was on, and then I recreated that now just for a second, but as myself. Yeah, and it did super great. It did amazing. So anyway, stuff like that's fun, and just letting people know. Because even though I've been around a long time, very few people know about actually my personal stuff. They don't really know. You know, I was old school. You kept that private. Right. So I'm just now sort of embracing the fact that I can be, you know, a little more, you know, vulnerable and sort of expose some of that stuff that I feel comfortable with. You know,
yeah, and I would encourage you to make music videos too.
I'm going to. I know. Yeah. That is something. I think for BS, we're going to actually, which will
especially
be fun.
Especially with the director brother.
I know.
You know.
No, we're going to. This was a test run. A lot of people invested, you know, Matthew invested a lot to bring this to life, and I think he wanted to see if it had some legs, and it's got legs. So now is like phase two. That's why we just did a 5-song, and now we're going to do five more.
Right.
So
yeah. Smart.
And you know, the Christmas movie on
Amazon. Mistletoe Mix Up is still on Amazon. It's going to be great. Frankie Meets Jack will be on Tubi next year, and we're doing a brand new series, which I will only say that it's really exciting. It's the team from The Wedding Crashers, which I've always loved, and it is a back with the brothers again. But as grown ass men, for the first time in 20 years.
Wow.
And it's single camera, and it is super, super good, man. It's really funny and really edgy, and I think people are going to be, but yet we're not, like, it's very vulnerable and edgy and funny all at the same time, and I think people are going to like it.
I love it, man. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Same here, brother. Yeah, I've been a fan for a long time,
dude. Well, thank you, man.
Yeah, dude.
J-Law.
Yeah, dude.
I'm going to introduce the guys. This is Scott Randolph. And I would say the gorgeous Paul Brisky, but with you in the
band. No, he is.
Yeah, wow.
He is, man.
The mediocre Paul Brisky.
Right on, dude. Awesome, guys. That really was great, man. Thanks,
Steve. I appreciate it, brother. Truly, thanks for the opportunity, man.
There it is, dude. I really liked Joey Lawrence, man. And I wonder, should I just say that next week we know it's going to be his most famous co-star? Woof. I said it. We might have the host of Jeopardy. Is that too much?
I mean, that gave it away completely, but that's cool. Let's
do
it.
You were doing it. That was awesome.
Yeah, KD, we're riding with it, dude. I'm in a good mood. I'm gonna rock it. And what can I say, dude? As I sit here, it's the night before this comes out, and that is Thursday, March 10th, which is the night of the biggest show of my life, dude. I'm so stoked. I'm nervous. I'm going to be in a 1,500 seat theater with people in the audience like Spike Jones, like I'm Knoxville, I'm gonna, like my people, bunch of celebrities, industry executives. Woof! It's time for me to flex like how far I've come in this live comedy game. So if you're in LA and it's Thursday, dude, fucking try and squeeze in there. Get in there, dude. Baby, come on. Thanks, dudes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
My little brother's friends have been camped out at our place for 2 days straight.
Three.
It's because of the Xfinity 10G network. Internet that can handle a house full of screens at once with, like, basically no interruptions. And it's only getting faster. When I was their age, internet like this was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Please go home.
Introducing the next generation 10G network, only from Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas.